The Warrior Soul podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas to U.S. military veterans and anybody else willing to listen to help them to navigate toward living their absolute best lives. If you find these episodes helpful, please share them out with somebody that you know of that can use them. And if you really like the podcast, please also head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and a review. It really helps us to spread word about the show, and it really helps to get these tools in the hands of others who really need them. This podcast is sponsored by F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate, with sea salt, with pecan butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they also have a number of other fat-fueled snacks, like their meat sticks and their cheese crisps. They're amazing people who are sending boxes of this stuff out to the troops on the front lines, and they're offering 20% off to our listeners on their first orders. If you head over to www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WarriorSoul at checkout, you'll get 20% off of that first order. And I'm going to keep the announcements short and sweet today. If you can, stick around to the end. I got a really special announcement about a brotherhood that we're creating here at Warrior Soul. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you get a lot out of it. And without delay, let's get into it.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's a solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What's going on, ladies and gents? I was just sitting here thinking about how awesome it is to do this show. I've been going through a rough period the last few weeks. I've been going through an autoimmune flare-up. I've been anemic. I've been losing a lot of blood. I've been extraordinarily sick. And, it's been a rough patch for me. But what drives me, what keeps me going, is knowing that you guys are getting something out of the work we do here every week. The work that we do to empower the veteran community, to get our young men and women who serve this country and to turn them into wiser, stronger, more capable human beings in the civilian world so they can take their rightful place as leaders in our society. That's what drives me. And it is such a privilege to do this show every single week. And if I did not have this, I don't know where I would be. So I just wanted to thank all of you. We're having a record month of downloads this month. That means more people are sharing the episodes. That means more people are writing reviews. That means more people are coming back and listening again and again and again. So again, I want to thank you. I appreciate you guys so much. And I just wanted to say that before I got into introducing this week's guest. My guest for this episode is Mr. Akshay Nanavanti. And this guy is awesome. He's developed a concept called Fearvana, and he's got this saying. He says that if you do not go out and find and embrace your struggle, then your struggle is going to find you. Now, there's so much truth to that statement. You can choose to either wait for struggle, and then when it shows up, allow it to break you, or you can go out and you can find the struggle and embrace the struggles you're currently facing in life, and you can allow them to make you stronger. That's a concept that goes back thousands of years. If you go back to the Stoic philosophers like Epictetus, Marcus Aurelius, Seneca, there's also a lot of influence on religious doctrine. And if you ever read the book by Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, a book that I'm constantly talking about because I think everybody needs to read it, that's essentially what he gets back to. you can live an amazing life regardless of your circumstances if you choose to embrace the struggle around you. Now, what Akshay has done is he has taken this concept of Firvana and he's turned it into an idea that can empower anybody. He's got a great book and a little bit about his backstory. He served as a U.S. Marine, served in Iraq, came back, fell into alcoholism, you know, the typical veteran story. And then, he decided that he wanted to get better. So he put years of research into studying the brain, studying neuroscience, studying spirituality. And he went out and he went out on a search. He's trekked across, he's trekked across the Arctic. He has done a lot of crazy extreme endurance stuff. So he's an extreme endurance athlete and, he's embracing fear whenever he can, but you don't have to do that kind of stuff to do it. You can face whatever it is in your life right now that's causing you fear and you can get this same kind of thing. And we talk about that today. We'll have the book and everything up on the show notes so that you guys can access it. Like I said, this is a great interview. I'm not going to delay any longer. So let's get into this conversation with Mr. Akshay Nanavati. Hey, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks so much for having me here, brother. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Where are you calling in from?
From Jersey.
Jersey? What part of Jersey is that?
A place called Basking Ridge. I don't know if you're familiar. Little suburbia. Nobody's here. Nobody comes here for any reason.
My mom's from North Bergen, Union City.
Oh, roger that. Okay.
So she's up there. She lives in Connecticut now. I'm from Connecticut originally.
Okay.
But grew up going down to North Jersey a lot.
Gotcha.
And then my grandmother, she lived in her older age, lived in Toms River, which is like, it's way south, like past the Pine Barrens.
Yeah. Familiar with the area a little bit.
Nice. Cool, and so you joined when did you join the Marine Corps?
I joined in 2004 and did 6 years. Yeah. I had just moved to the U.S. Actually, when I joined, I wasn't even a U.S. citizen. I enlisted as a green card holder.
Really? Really? Yeah. And where did you come from?
From India. I was born in India. I moved from India to Singapore and then to the U.S. when I was 13.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Wow. And what was that experience like for you?
You know, I mean, it was when I didn't see it as any, I didn't experience anything as a barrier. In fact, it was only a positive. And when I was in boot camp, which, you know, in boot camp, you don't get praised a lot, if at all. they don't really pay you compliments. Yeah. But I actually got a few compliments from drill instructors from other platoons who were just like, man, this is awesome. You're not even an American. And here you are fighting for the country and joining the Marines. So it was kind of like a badge of honor. So if anything, it was like a pro, you know.
I always thought that was really cool that people who would not even be citizens who'd come to the country decided to serve and to put their lives on the line for it. I think that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was post 9/11 too, right? When I enlisted, so it was almost inevitable that I would get deployed, and obviously I did. But it was,
so you knew that was going to happen, right? See, when I went
signed
in,
up as 03. I mean, I came in 03 ready to go. Man, I volunteered to go every chance I could after boot camp and coming into my unit.
That's awesome. Yeah. When I went in, it was 1999. And I think people forget, like, at that time, like, we didn't even think there was going to be a war. Like, we said, okay, I remember when I was in the School of Infantry, they were like, we have to constantly be prepared for a war with China and things like that. But we didn't know there was going to be anything happening, you know, 2 years later.
Yeah.
I remember being just such a huge surprise because, like, up to that point, the only people who had really had combat experience, I mean, there was a few people from like Kosovo, a couple of guys who served in Somalia.
Yeah.
We had a guy in my unit who was in Haiti, served in Liberia, but it was like, it was all scattered, right? Now,
I mean,
the military is full of combat veterans.
Now it's OIF and OEF. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man.
So, for those who don't know who you are, give us a quick introduction to your story, what you do, and what your message is.
Roger that. Yeah. So my story, like my message is around this concept I created called Fearvana. And the idea of Fearvana is fear and nirvana, two seemingly contradictory ideas, right? They're often framed as opposites. But I've come to learn through a lot of life experience, a lot of research in neuroscience, psychology, and spirituality, that they're actually complementary. And the idea of Fearvana is to develop a positive relationship to not just fear, but the suffering and struggle of any kind, and using it as a tool to live a more blissful, meaningful, and ultimately even enlightened life. And I discovered this not just from being in the Marines, but I mean, before joining the Marines, I struggled with drug addiction, lost two friends to that lifestyle. I was in this place, man, I was cutting myself, burning myself, just in this very dark place, got out, joined the Marines. After joining the Marines, I started looking for positive ways to experience that high that I once looked for through drugs. So I went like mountain climbing, cave diving, skydiving, ice climbing, rock climbing. I mean, you name it. I fractured 4 bones in 3 months from rock climbing, skydiving, all of it, you know, just like exploring my, ultimately not just nature, but exploring myself, and nature was the playground to do so. Deployed to Iraq as an infantry Marine, came back, struggled with PTSD, depression, alcoholism, was on the verge of suicide. And that was that low moment, man. When I hit that low moment, it was the transition point that led me down this path of research to that brought me to where what I do now with Fearvana, and ultimately finding meaning and purpose in my own suffering and realizing that it's actually something beautiful. And the focus should be on post-traumatic growth, not post-traumatic stress disorder. And that was kind of my own learning on using trauma and adversity and suffering and pain as a tool for growth and a tool for bliss.
Right. That's a great story, man. And you know, one of the things I notice about society these days, there's a lot of people out there who are out there trying to chase meaning and purpose, right? So they're trying to find it in so many different ways. They're taking self-help courses. They're trying all these different, reading a million books, right? Following all these people on social media. It seems like there's a million different messages that we can get from social media as to how to improve our lives and how to really improve ourselves. But at the same time, it seems like people are getting more and more lost, right? And they're not finding it, even though they're searching so hard for it. Why do you think that is?
Great question, man. I love that question. I think partly because we're searching so much externally. And externally is what the world tells us how to live, right? In social media world, we follow everybody. This person says this is what it takes to be happy. The external world is telling us what it really takes to be happy. And we are creatures that are, we're ultimately being shaped, we are shaped by our environment. I mean, even with a high degree of self-awareness, even if like insanely high degree of self-awareness, we are still at the effect of our environment. Our brains, our subconscious brains, they respond to the external stimuli and shape our patterns of behavior. We're all ultimately just creatures of habit, right? Like from the day we're born, we're soaking in external stimuli, and that's shaping our response to the world and how we react and live in the world. So with social media, we're just getting bombarded with more nonsense, ultimately, more stuff on telling us how to live our life. This will make us happy. It feeds us instant gratification. And there's all this kind of thing about like, don't compare yourself to others, right? And that's also garbage, because our brain naturally does compare ourselves to others. If you when we look at something as simple as like a blender, why do I like one blender over, I like it because I compare it to another one, right? We operate in everything in our brain in reference to other things. We like one vacation because we have a reference to another one. Our brain operates on references. So social media is just feeding this nonsense that like, you know, it's feeding it's triggering our referential brain saying, this is how things are. This is what will make us happy. And we follow that. The reality is we got to go dig deep within. And we dig deep within by finding that meaning through suffering, through struggle, right? I mean, when I joined the Marines, man, I had a good life before that. My parents were great parents. I didn't have an abusive childhood, gave me everything, couldn't have asked for more, you know, but I had no clue what I wanted. I was this lost kid, hence delving down drugs, you know, looking for easy way out. Through the Marines, I started to find the beauty in suffering. Like that was me. That's why so many of us struggle when we come out, because in the Marines, one of many things, but one reason is why there's like this meaning to it. There's a purposeful struggle to it. We complain about the adversity all the time, right? Marines, we're going to bitch when we're out in the field. That's just what we do. But at the same time, we kind of love it. You know what I mean? You know that. Yeah. Like we love it. And there's a beauty to that. So having that is what it takes, you know, seeking that struggle.
That's one thing I tell people is that, you know, I look back at my life and I can't think of a time when I was generally happier than I was when I was in the Marine Corps.
That's, you know, really, that,
the sense of self-worth I had, the ability to just focus on one thing. I mean, you didn't really have to worry about too much. You didn't have any bills at the time.
Exactly.
Didn't have to worry about rent. Didn't really have to worry about what I was going to wear every day. Right.
Exactly.
So
and
you're surrounded by friends, right? You know, a lot of the time that downtime or the hurry up and wait time, you know, you just spent sitting on your pack, throwing a dip in and talking with other people. Right.
Yep. So it's got that human connection, right? You got clarity of focus, clarity of purpose. You, like you said, there's no choices. It's a psychologist called this the paradox of choice. When there's too many choices, we don't know what to do and we don't make a decision, which is one of the reasons why we're, again, more lost than ever before. And the Marines and the military takes away that. No choice. So there's clarity. There's community. There's a mission, you know, separate from, again, all the politics of all the wars. And if you just remove all the politics, on the ground out there, there's this meaning to what we do. There's this doing it as one together with this brotherhood. There's this high you kind of get from living life at a more intense level than you do in the mundane. And so it taps into so many human needs, right? That it makes it a very addictive experience, which is why it's hard to get out. And so many of us struggle. Yeah. I mean, God knows I miss it too, man. So I get it.
Yeah, that, or I think, and for the younger guys who are listening to this as well, who might still be in, one thing I think happens is that we build up this image of what it's going to be like on the outside, you know, when nobody's running around telling us not to put our hands in our pockets or telling us to do this or doing that. We think it's going to be this great thing. And that keeps us from being present in the moment. You don't get enough out of your experience while you're there. And then you get out, and you're left with this kind of anticlimactic feeling, like the past few years just kind of passed you by. And now you're in a position where you're entering a new realm, a new world with no one handing you a new purpose or anything like that. And I think a lot of guys have a lot of regrets about getting out because of that.
Dude, such a good point, man. And absolutely true, you know, because when we're in it, like, again, we're in sometimes these circumstances in the training or in war where it's the grass is always greener, right? Like, I'm sitting here in some swampy thing. It just sucks. I'd rather be without this or not have people tell me what to do. But there's so much beauty in the simplicity of that existence, you know, and we think there's freedom when we don't have these rules, but the real freedom is in structure. The real freedom is in discipline. I mean, when I got out, people think, oh, you're a Marine, you're disciplined, but I actually took a 180, which I'm sure you or many of us can relate to, like, oh, sweet, right? No freedom. I mean, no discipline. I don't have to follow any rules. Let me go hog wild, right? And that was what caused me more problems. And now what I've done in building my business and creating the life that I've now live is basically replicating the structures, the systems. The hard part is I have to do it myself. It's not imposed upon me. But now that I've been able to do it, that's the freedom. Freedom isn't structure. Freedom isn't discipline, because if you don't have that freedom, you're basically surrendering to your subconscious brain. You're surrendering to your brain, which the Nobel Prize winning psychologist, his name is Daniel Kahneman, wrote this great book, Thinking Fast and Slow. He says that the brain is naturally lazy. It's going to retreat to the easiest course of action. So if you don't have the freedom of structure, you're imprisoned by laziness. You're imprisoned by that. That's the real prison. And then you're inevitably going to see the problems we see in terms of mental health, our happiness, like everything, right? That's the real struggle. That's the real suffering. If you don't seek out that meaningful struggle through the discipline, through structure, you're going to suffer anyway. And that suffering is far, far worse. And we see that all the time.
Right, right. Kahneman and Amos Tversky, they both won a Nobel Prize for developing what's called prospect theory. And a lot of that talks to us about the psychology of framing, right? And you tend to frame your experience based on, you know, fear of loss, based on whether or not you think there's going to be a loss involved. And a lot of times that can seriously affect your decision-making. In fact, they've made a whole study of this. I worked on my PhD in political science and went through a whole psychology section where this affected our line of thinking about how political decisions were made in huge ways. And that's a really valuable contribution that he made.
Yeah, I don't, to be honest with you, I don't remember that specific part. I read Thinking Fast and Slow a long time ago as research for my own book with Fearvana, but I remember loving it. And I mean, I used it as a great deal of research to write my own book, but their work is amazing. Learned a ton from it.
Yeah.
Really fascinating really stuff.
Good. So we get to this point, we get out, we're not finding the meaning that we want. And so because we can't find meaning, we search for other things, right? And that's something that Viktor Frankl talks about. If you can't find meaning in your life, then you're going to opt for more hedonistic pleasures and things like that. And so, so you're at this point when you got out, you're waking up on the couch, you got an empty bottle of vodka next to you. You can't figure out what the heck you're going to do. Tell us about that time in your life.
Yeah, this was years after the war, actually, that I was at that really really low moment. When I got back from Iraq, right after I got back, I went to grad school. When I got back, I volunteered to go back to Iraq and Afghanistan every chance I could get. I was like, man, this sucks being here. Just send me back, you know? I wanted to go back every chance I could get. And you know how it is. Marine Corps admin is not, it's not always the easiest in the world to work with. So it was a challenge to, and I was like, come on, man, I'm a sergeant who's been out to Iraq. So why would you not send me back, you know? Right. But anyway, it didn't end up happening. So I actually went to master's in journalism because I wanted to go back to war as a war photographer, as a war journalist. And then I met my wife at the time in now ex-wife, I met her in grad school. And, you know, then came, so that kind of plans changed. I was like, all right, let me try to, you know, get married, settle down, had a job for a little bit. But then when all those sort of structures faded away, and as I was building my business, that's when sort of the demons started to rise. You know, I didn't have the freedom of structures. So now the demons started to rise. And soon after that, man, we were struggling, to be, again, very frank with you. I was having physical issues with my wife at the time, and it wasn't anything physical. It was a psychological problem, you know? So
like sexual issues or
sexual issues. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sexual issues. But it wasn't a physical issue. It was a psychological thing. So, she was like, look, let's figure this out, you know? And so I went to the VA and, started seeing the therapist there. And that's when things started to get worse and worse and worse. And the drinking just started to get really, really bad. And then after, like, and I would usually just sneak it. Like, my wife would be passed out and I would just be sneaking down, like hiding booze in under the kitchen sink or this, that, and other places, you know? And, after like days of binge drinking, I would just drink till like, just, you know, if she wasn't in town, I would just drink nonstop. If she was, I would drink all night, you know? But one morning after days of this, it was just, I woke up and I was like, this pattern of drinking and sobering up is never going to change. So I was about to like literally just go over to the kitchen, pick up a knife and slit my wrist because I was like, there's no point going on.
Yeah. You say in the book that after your therapy sessions, you'd often feel worse.
Yeah. I would often go drive straight to the liquor store to drink more. And, you know, I take responsibility for my behavior. I can't blame anybody else. But what I came to learn in my research later on is that our general and our conventional approach to therapy is deeply flawed. Our approach to mental well-being is deeply flawed. Like the therapist that I worked with, I know the VA sometimes does get demonized and stuff like that, but the therapist I worked with were great people, very loving people, good human beings, but they're just operating from a bad playbook. And we all do the best we can with our knowledge and awareness, right? Like they genuinely cared about me. I could tell that. But only as I kind of navigated my own learnings did I learn that just their methodologies were flawed. And to some degree, you can't necessarily blame them for that. They were doing the best they could with their own awareness. But yeah, the methodologies were deeply flawed. And that's what kind of led me on my own path when I really hit these low moments that I was like, look, something's got to change. I got to figure this stuff out, you know? And so I started researching myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And so was there like a singular moment that you said, okay, I'm in this state right now. I'm drinking myself to death. Yeah. I'm having suicidal ideations. Was there a single moment where you said, all right, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. I'm going to change something.
Yeah. You know, that moment when I was literally on the verge about to slip my own wrist, that moment was a shocker to me. It shocked me that I even thought that. But what I share, and I share this in the book, is that I still drank after that. Like it was, you know, that was the trigger, but like it wasn't that suddenly that happened and everything transformed and became better overnight. It's a climb out of that abyss. And right. A climb means sometimes you take 5 steps forward and maybe 2 steps back or 3 steps back, or sometimes maybe even 7 steps back. But then you get back up and take 2 more steps. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like it just magically shifted. I do always say that that was the trigger when I actually genuinely pondered and was like wanting to take my own life. That was the trigger point for change, but it was a slow climb out of that abyss. It wasn't that it just radically changed overnight. And then I started researching. Then I started figuring out. Then I was like, okay, this something's got to change. But you know, the demons would rise back up from time to time, man. And I had to develop a positive relationship to those demons. That was the real shifting point when I started to learn that the real problem is not post-traumatic stress. The real problem is the assignment and the label of disorder to post-traumatic stress. And figuring that out was the true transformation.
I want to talk about that. But first I want to mention this too, because like you mentioned, you went to grad school, you got married, and I'm sure the idea was to settle down suburban New Jersey and have a family, go to work every day, do your thing. Right. And I think a lot of times when guys come back, there's this idea that there's a script that they've got to follow. Right. Mm-hmm. And the script says, you didn't go to college, so go get your education. And then, find a woman, doesn't necessarily have to be the woman of your dreams, but settle down. Right. And do your thing and fall into this conformity status with what society expects from you. And I think, you know, deep inside me, I did the same thing, right? I went to grad school. I got married with a girl from Connecticut, brought her out here to California, recreated like my childhood upbringing for a while. That led to divorce too. And eventually led to me living out of my car for a while. But like, I think we fall into these patterns of trying to do what other people expect of us. Yeah. And it's such a mistake after you go through such an extreme situation. You know, one of the most extreme situations known to man, you know, to expect that you can just settle down into that kind of life. Right.
Yeah. And you're right, man. This is what we were talking about earlier, right? Like that we, like, whether it be a veteran or not, we all are framed in this paradigm of how our life should look like, you know? And exactly. Even for the veteran community, you come back and you're told this is the way. And it's not even like, again, we all do the best we can with our level of knowledge and awareness at the time and our abilities. Right. But Ian, even with a high degree of self-awareness to be able to kind of rise above that, you're still trapped. We are still, I mean, even like now I'm very self-aware, but I'm still trapped by certain things that I have to recognize. Oh, I'm only thinking this thing because I believe this, but like the world tells us how we should be. So you're absolutely right, man. We kind of fall in this paradigm of what the path should be after we're coming. This will be sort of the right path or the path to happiness. But I mean, even mine, when I came back, wasn't that conventional. Like it was to a certain degree, but I knew I was still seeking something more. But what truth is like for example, 1 month after I got married, I went and spent, I spent a month in Greenland dragging a 190-pound sled for 350 miles skiing across the world's second largest ice cap in temperatures as low as minus 40 degrees. It was awesome. It was intense. And truth be told, it was me seeking other avenues to experience the intensity of war. You know, that's what it was. I wanted to go back to these intense environments where your life is on the line. I mean, it wasn't war, but it was like, in a way, that's what I was seeking, right? Like, so I went, I mean, in Greenland was intense. The year after my trip out there, a British explorer was killed in one of these storms that were brutal storms that we got stuck in while we were out there that could have easily, you know, I mean, it did kill somebody the year after my crossing. So I was seeking that. And I kept running. And ultimately, what I was doing was I was just running away from myself. And the thing you got to be careful of, even the positive things we do, like going to Greenland, running ultra marathons was positive compared to, let's say, drinking and drugs or anything like that. Right. But even sometimes the positive things can be a way to run away from ourselves.
Right, right. And you end up, either way, you end up working really hard for things that don't necessarily mean.
That don't know. Exactly. That you don't know. You're just running away. You're following a path assigned to you by the world around you. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can figure that out, man, is you gotta take some time for stillness. And that doesn't, I mean, look, there's value in doing a 10, 20 minute meditation, but I mean like really going deep within, like, I mean, I, again, I take a lot of things to an extreme level. I'm not saying everybody's got to go do this, but like last year, or not even last year, a few months ago, I spent 7 days in pitch darkness, isolation, and silence, just sitting in a dark room for 7 full days to confront my fear of stillness, just to be completely. So I'm not saying you got to necessarily go that level, but you got to go into places that are highly uncomfortable. That's why I talk so much about suffering. Like, and now I'm an ultra runner, right? So I'll run like 50 miles, 80 miles. I do these long runs. And when you're at these experiences of intense suffering, you will find something else within. That's the same thing that drew us in the Marines, right, man. Like, that's why we love the suffering of that. And then you find that purpose there. So now you got to seek it out though. But the difference is in the Marines, it's assigned to you. Like, you wake up and you go, you might not feel like it, but you have to get your ass out on the run, right? Because you're told to. It's easy when you're not forced to. I'm not going to go today. Who's going to stop me? And there's not some, you know, not some staff sergeant or somebody chewing your ass out to go out for a run, you know? So it's easy to not do that. But you got to, so the challenge is then you got to create that discipline yourself. But when you do, the rewards of that are the same rewards that we get from joining the Marines. And you'll find far more peace by actually seeking out that inner war. You know, that's the real path to peace, is actually the pursuit of war. And I'm not saying the external war, but the inner internal war and pursuing that internal war. That's how you really find that peace.
Right. So the goal is not the absence of suffering. You need suffering, absolutely, some sort of suffering in your life. Right?
Without a doubt. Yeah. And you got to seek it out. Like, the thing is, it's happening anyway. If you don't seek it out, it's going to find you anyway. So seek out a meaningful suffering.
Right. Right. And so when you are in this state, right, you're climbing out, right. You've realized that you had a problem. You're climbing out of that hole. You're still drinking. What were some of the ways that you started bringing suffering into your life? Was it the ultra endurance stuff? Was it other things?
So at first it was starting to, like, the first healing was running. Running has been my salvation without a doubt. And then it was building a business. Then it was writing a book. Writing a book was one of the hardest things I ever did, man. Writing a book was miserable. So, because as I started healing myself and learning all this stuff, I realized I had to share it, you know, I had to share it with others, because of course I'm not the only person that suffered. Everybody's gone through it in some way. So writing that book, and now what I continue to do is running, working out, building the business, continue to do these things that I do, spending 7 days in darkness, you know, spending stuff like now I still do things like the skiing across Greenland. I'm in fact going next year. I'm planning 2 polar expeditions, one in Northern Norway under the Northern Lights, and then skiing across the Patagonian ice cap, eventually skiing in the North Pole. So I'm still doing these things that I was doing, but I'm not doing them as a place of running away anymore. You know, okay. So I'm doing them from a very different level of consciousness than I was back then. And so that's like my worthy suffering today is basically fitness and business. And business ties also into my nonprofit work. I have a nonprofit foundation, so we support like amazing causes. I've worked with this group that's former child soldiers in West Africa, to young girls who are victims of sex trafficking in India. And just, again, people who have experienced suffering in its like darkest forms, and helping them transform that into an experience of meaning and now pursue a meaningful struggle from their experiences.
And while you were bringing all this stuff into your life, were you still working a full-time job while you were doing it?
No, I'd quit my job. After finishing grad school, I got a corporate job for a year and a half. But the day I signed up for that job was the day I signed up for the Greenland trip. So I was like, I knew exactly what day I would quit that job, was because I was like, okay, you got a year and a half now to start kind of building your side hustle and then ski across Greenland. And then, because I blew like 15K to go ski across Greenland, you know, so I didn't have a lot of savings coming back from this, but started building my business. And it was going well, but then it's kind of started tanking as inevitably as I started drinking more and my mind and spirit was tanking. And then as I healed again, my business started growing as well. And now I'm in a good space and things are going well.
Hey guys, one of the big messages behind Warrior Soul is that life here on this earth is short. You don't get to be here forever. And so because of that, you need to make sure that you're making every moment count. You have no reason not to. And that's why we've created a group here at Warrior Soul called the Warriors Obituary Society. It's a group of men who are empowering each other to live absolutely epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. It starts with an 8-week development program. And in that development program, the first thing you're going to do is outline your vision. You're going to get very clear about what you want out of this life. And from that vision, you're going to derive very specific goals that you're going to work on. From there, we work on very specific areas of your life. We help you to develop a fitness program that's customized to your needs and your goals. And then we help you to work on a finance plan so that you can stop spending your money on trash, start saving money, start knocking down debt, and start building up your dreams. From there, we're working on your relationships. We're helping you with your business and your career, and we are helping you to build a world-class network. In each week of the development program, you're going to get assignments that are going to get you closer to your goal, and they're going to work on a specific area of your life. Each month, we're doing challenges as a group. We meet once a week on a live call, and then we communicate over our own private Slack workspace. We don't do anything over social media because I don't want any members getting distracted by a bunch of alerts, and I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulder. If this is something that seems interesting to you, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's warriorobituarysociety.com. Lots of these types of programs out there cost thousands of dollars. This is not one of those programs. I wanted to open its access as widely as possible to those in this community who want to build their absolute best lives. So check it out. And if you have any questions about anything, feel free to DM me on Instagram, or you can email me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. Now let's get back to this interview. So tell me about the business itself and that journey.
Sure.
You know, when we think about business in today's day and age, there's a lot of stuff you can do. The entrepreneurship's a great road for people. There's also people who I think shouldn't be entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
They should back the heck away from it because it's probably not going to be the road they should go down. But when you were deciding to put a business together, you know, what was your product? What was your product idea?
Yeah.
You know, how did you go about putting that together?
Sure. So when I started my business, like when I had the corporate job on the side, I was getting trained as a life coach, because after coming out of Iraq and kind of starting to get into, you know, and all the stuff I had done, like mountain climbing and all that stuff was pushing me into ultimately mastery over the self. So that's what kind of led me down the personal development and personal growth path. And so becoming a life coach seemed like I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure. I thought, okay, maybe this will be an interesting thing to go do, because I was, you know, personal growth was kind of resonating with me. So I was getting trained as a life coach, and that's how I started. That's what I was building my business, is getting coaching clients, working with people one-on-one. And, you know, I didn't have like a systematized, structured business. I wasn't one of those entrepreneurs that you hear that when you're 7 years old, you already start selling stuff in the lemonade stand, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like many entrepreneurs have their, I started when I was 7 years old kind of story. And that's awesome. Good for them. But I wasn't one of those guys. Like I was figuring stuff out and just doing basically the bare minimum to just pay the bills. And we're living a good quality of life. We were still traveling, you know, my now ex-wife, but my wife at the time, we had gone to like the Caribbean and stuff. So we were just making and spending whatever I needed, you know, but no structure, no systems. Now it's a much better spot. So now I sell digital information products. I get paid as a public speaker. I don't do a lot of one-on-one coaching anymore, but I have my book as well. I mean, well, the book doesn't make money. All the profits go to the foundation for my book. So I don't make money off the book, but we support some beautiful causes, as I said. But now I have digital information products. And that, you know, the knowledge economy is one of the fastest growing economies in the world. It's easy in that you're just selling your knowledge and expertise, but by no means is it like don't fall into the trap of a lot of people like, oh, that just because you're selling your knowledge, it's easy to make money. There's a lot of that nonsense online.
Right.
It's garbage. Like nothing worthwhile is easy. It's friggin' hard. It's really hard. But that's kind of what I do now. And where I'm going now, the next phase is building kind of like this Fearvana empire. So what Richard Branson is to the Virgin Empire, I'm building with Fearvana. But unlike Virgin, I'm not planning to get in like mobile and airlines or stuff like that. Staying in the space of well-being and enhancing and transformation. So enhancing mind, body, spirit, and our collective experience of life. So creating like a Fearvana Academy, Fearvana Fitness, Fearvana Festivals, Fearvana Retreats, like a whole ecosystem under this Fearvana brand is the next phase that I'm going into as we move into 2020 and beyond.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So are you attacking each part of this empire one by one? Are you working on all of them at the same time, or is there...
No, mostly one by one. I mean, like it's focused one by one. So right now I have digital information products, you know, scaling those funnels and then using what I make to reinvest into this. So the next immediate step is creating this tech educational platform through the Fear of Online Academy. And once we get enough of a name following the Branson model, the licensing play of how he played, how he did Virgin. I mean, what he's done with the Virgin is absolutely brilliant, like how he built Virgin. So following that model and like the key thing that that I've learned, I mean, we all know from the Marines is, nothing great happens alone. We succeed as one together. And so partnering with people who are way smarter than me, I have a business mentor who's built, you know, incredibly successful companies. He's mentoring me. I have partners in gamification and behavior design, tech partners, all people who are way smarter than me. I'm basically doing the Branson thing. I do all this crazy stuff like seeing across ice caps and spending 7 days in darkness to grow my brand and build the ethos of Fearvana. And that funnels into brand growth and brand recognition that will then funnel into my business growth as well. So it all kind of, and then my business growth allows me to go do these next crazy adventures because the things that I do are not cheap. So,
no, absolutely. So
it fuels into itself, but yeah, that's where it's all going.
How do you find those partnerships?
It's been an evolution, man. Like, you know, I wouldn't say it's all luck, but you have to learn to leverage luck when it comes your way. Is that, let's put it that way. But partly it's just like starting the process. I mean, when I came out of this darkness, right? Like I had no connections, nothing, right? Like, I mean, you know, no platform, nothing like that. And then I reached out. I started reaching out to people, like sharing my story. That's how I got the forward for my book from the Dalai Lama. Like getting forward from my book from the Dalai Lama was a game changer, man. Like, but it was a pure cold pitch, you know, just sharing my story, coming from that place of authenticity.
Does he have like an email address or like, did you have to climb a mountain to go meet him or anything like that?
Like
or...
Batman Begins, scaled it. Yeah. No, I mean, I just did a lot of research, found a name and a contact in the office of His Holiness and shared my story. 5 to 6 months of just healthy persistence, building relationships, you know, got that forward. Then building relationships with the next person, getting endorsements for my book. Once I got endorsements from the book, I got 20 pretty legit endorsements for my book. People like Seth Godin, Jack Canfield, Marshall Goldsmith, Keith Ferrazzi, amazing human beings that have all touched my life. So genuine people that I respect and admire that I reached out to. Then I used that to get media and publicity for my book. You know, so I got on a lot of podcasts, got a lot of TV. I was on Inc., Forbes, Entrepreneur.com, Fast Company, a lot of media. Then used that to fuel the next media win. So people started hearing about me. So then they started reaching out to me. Then I shared what I was up to. And then we would be like, hey, let's do these things. You know, so really just hustling, grinding, playing the long game. And once you find that right connect, like, so I have a partner in artificial intelligence, amazing platform. She's created this AI emotional intelligence coach. So it's like an AI form of therapy called WISA. Amazing platform. Like the tech, like what she's done is incredible. And I truly believe it's a really valuable resource for anybody struggling with any kind of mental health issues. And how we met was, I can't even remember to be honest with you, but one of these things led to the next, led to the next, led to the next. And then here I was, you know, and I was like, I love what we're doing. Let's partner. So when you build up, when you work hard enough, you build up a reputation, you get this, you stay in the grind. People will see what you're doing. You come from that authenticity, come from a genuine place of service. And if you're in the fight, like people, winners want to be around winners. You know what I mean? So if you are showing that, people will come to you, you will chase the right people. And then now it's like, it's a little easier for me to now reach out to somebody and say, you know, hey, I'm doing this thing because I'm more well known now, you know? But even like my business mentor, he read Fearvana, invited me to go speak at one of his retreats. Loved what I'm doing with Fearvana. Like he loved the book. He gives it out at his retreats. He then was like, I'd love to, I asked him, would you mentor me? He said, yes, because he believed in me. And this guy's an amazing human being. And he's also a master at business in a way that I'm certainly not. So, you know, so you just stay in the hustle and you find one step at a time. But really also just focusing. If you're starting out, wherever you're starting out, focus on one mentor, get one mentor in something. Like you have to, I would say like you cannot do this alone. So get one mentor in something. Like if you're focusing right now on running, like when I was running was my main focus, I got a running mentor, a running coach. I got to a point now I'm pretty good at doing that on my own. I'm good to go, you know? So I have business mentor. Business is like my area of most discomfort. I can handle running on my own, but I don't know anything about scaling an empire that I want to scale. Like that's a whole new world to me. And I can openly admit that. So I get mentors who have done it. And then I follow along.
That's a really important note for everybody out there listening, because I think as veterans, a lot of times we have this thing in our mind like, oh, I'm not going to associate myself with nasty civilians. I'm not going to do this. If anybody has a different perspective than mine, screw them. I have a group. It's called the Warriors Obituary Society. And mm-hmm. we work with men who are trying to help themselves to live their best lives. Mm-hmm. And I've got guys in there who are like, well, I'm not going to mess with anybody who's not a fan of POTUS and doesn't like this and doesn't like that. And here's the thing, guys, no matter where you are, what you're trying to doing, you need people. You need other people to Absolutely. Help you along on your way. You can't go into life with this kind of Rambo mentality. And I need to listen to that too, because my business career has always been war, like going to war on my own, Absolutely. Trying to do this, trying to do that. But the reason why I'm a podcaster today is because I went and I worked with London Real for 3 years. I was a lead instructor of their academy, right? Mm. And the thing I learned from that is that, you know, I'm watching other people build their empires. I'm watching other people build their teams, and you can't do everything on your own. Yeah. It's impossible.
Yeah.
It's impossible. You also can't sit back and wait for things to happen. I think so many people feel like they post enough on social media, they get enough followers, things are just going to happen, and they're not. Yeah. You know, you got to reach out to people. A lot of people ask me like, "Well, how do you get such amazing guests?" And it's because I reach out, I ask, I make a pitch, and there's value in it for them as well, you know?
Yeah, like you said, man, and you got to ask. You got to make a lot of people, like I know in the veteran world too, we feel like if I ask for help, it means I'm weak. It doesn't. Like, it's the only way you're going to grow is ask. Like, I ask for help in everything. If I don't know it, I'm like this business mentor. I was like, I literally asked him, would you be open to mentoring me? Because I don't know how to do any of this. It's not weak, and you're only going to grow faster. You're only going to do anything much faster to ask for it. And also the willingness to question your own paradigms. You know, like you said, like sometimes veterans will be like, nah, they're civilians or nasty, or this person is, they don't agree with me on this. If you stay trapped in your own belief system and your own worldview and your own way of thinking, that's as far as you're going to get. You know what I mean? You've gotten where you're at. You're going to have to do something differently to get to somewhere different. You're going to have to become a new person to achieve new goals. In order to become a new person, you have to let go of certain elements of this current person. So the willingness, and this I talk about this with so many people, like the willingness to be wrong about things is so rare and so important. The people who are successful are those in any measure of success, financial, physical, whatever, are being the ones who can say, hey, I can be wrong about this thing. This thing that I'm currently doing is clearly not working. Let me question myself. Let me say, hey, I'm wrong. But it is hard to be wrong, right? I mean, people fight, die, and kill for their belief systems. We kill each other for belief systems. That's what we're doing. That's how wars are happening, because we're killing for beliefs, right? But if we can pause and say, hey, maybe this belief is wrong. Maybe this paradigm is wrong. Maybe this mental model is wrong. Let me look at a different way of thinking. That's how you're going to actually get to the next self, your next greatest version of yourself, and ultimately use that to whatever to create the goals you want to get to. So question everything. Question yourself. Question your paradigms. Being coachable is something that will be like, okay, hey, can say, I don't know this. Can somebody help me? Cool. Like, tell me, like follow along with someone who's done what you want to do, figure out what they did, how they did it, what were their belief systems, what were their mental models, and then use that to scale your own growth at anything.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned before stillness, right? This idea of stillness. And you mentioned keeping yourself in dark room for 7 days. Were you fasting at the time too?
I did. Wasn't a complete fast. I did smoothies. So I didn't do smoothies. I didn't do food, just smoothies. Yeah.
So why would you do something like that? Because I know a lot of people, they would walk over hot coals before they'd be locked in a room and not have any stimulus for 7 days. Why would you do something like that?
So to be honest with you, what happened was I went through a divorce last year. It was very, very challenging. It was a hard time. And I ended up breaking my sobriety. So I drank again. And I was like, something's clearly missing within myself. I got to figure some stuff out. So I wanted to go deeper within. I wanted to go like experience stillness at its most intense level. What I originally was going to do was a silent retreat. These are a lot more popular. People go spend 10 days in silence. But in those places, you're still looking at the world. And so while I was doing research, I stumbled into this concept of a darkness retreat. And because you're in darkness, you're shutting off one of the primary senses with which we engage with the world, your visual sense. So ultimately, you have no external stimuli to attach your consciousness to. You can't look at things and say, that's a wall, that's a tree, that's a human being. You have nowhere else to go externally. So you're forced to go internal. You're forced to go within. I like to say that your soul becomes a mirror to itself. So I wanted to go within and see what shows up and go and practice stillness in the most intense way I could possibly find. And it was challenging, of course, but absolutely worth it.
Was this something that you did in your own home or did you actually have to travel? Did they have a retreat set up?
Yeah, I went to a place in Germany to go do this that's called a darkness retreat, because even if you try to do this in your own home and let's say sit in a room and have somebody bring you, like there's ambient light. So beyond just the stillness of the darkness, it's actually really important to be in pitch darkness, like not even this much, like not even any light at all for even 1 second, because neurologically, pretty interesting things happen to your brain. Among many things, but one of the things that happens neurologically when your brain is in an extended period of darkness for that period, for a long period of time, is it starts to naturally release DMT, which is one of the primary ingredients in ayahuasca. And right. So you have these trippy, like you go on these trips that were surreal. I mean, like as an example, I think it was day 5 or day 6 of the darkness retreat. I went through this moment where it was blindingly bright. I felt like I needed an eye mask to sleep. I was literally touching my eyelids, just touching my eyelids because I couldn't tell if my eyes were open or closed. And I was trying to cover them because it was so bright that I felt like but obviously I couldn't cover them because it wasn't actual light, but it was like the light was as real as anything else you could possibly imagine. I mean, it was surreal. That was one of many, many surreal experiences that I went through in the darkness.
Interesting. And so coming out of that, what was it like coming out of that? What happened, you know, the day you got out, day 7, you're released and walk out.
That was the most, I mean, I had many interesting things happen in the dark. I was also journaling in the dark. So I had some many interesting things that came through, but the coming out into the light for the first time in 7 days was one of the most profound experiences of my life. And definitely the most profound experience of that 7-day darkness retreat as well. I mean, I remember coming back out and looking at the world with those eyes and just saying to myself that I wish I could look at the world every day through those eyes. Like my two thought processes were, one was that, and the other one was just feeling this visceral and deep sense of gratitude for every bit of pain and suffering I've ever experienced in my life, because I realized, and I kind of knew this through my work with Theravana, but in that way, I experienced it in such a visceral way that you cannot really see the light this way unless you've been in the dark, you know? And of course, I mean that literally, but also figuratively, right? Like you cannot really experience the light in that way unless you've been in the dark. And it was so profound to feel that just viscerally, having experienced that after spending 7 days in pitch darkness.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, as somebody who's been depressed before, who's been down and out before, I can tell you that feeling of coming out of depression and seeing the light itself, that's a great feeling, right? When you actually get through it and you start to find meaning and purpose in your life, it's amazing. Let's get back to stillness though. When we're thinking about stillness, I meditate, I try to mm-hmm. I try my best to try to empty my mind and to try to get things out of it. What are some ways that people who wouldn't go on a retreat like that, how could they get back to stillness?
Yeah. So one way is exactly what you mentioned, meditation, but there's two kinds of meditation. And often the second kind is not talked about. The first kind is where you sit still, you close your eyes. And when a thought shows up, you let it float away and you anchor your mind to, let's say, your breathing. So you breathe in and out deeply. And every time a thought shows up, you let it float away and you bring your thought, let's say, back to your breathing. So your breathing becomes an anchor. That's one way. And that's the more common way to approach meditation. And if it's not your breathing, you can do as a guided meditation as well. The other way, which is both have their value. The other way, which is not done, but I think it's equally important, is where you actually don't let your thoughts float away and you don't anchor them to anything. You just let them go wild and go where they go. So I learned this exercise from an endurance cyclist friend of mine. What he would do is he would sit still in a room staring into a wall for up to 12 hours. I think he would do it for either 12 to 24 hours. And he would, let's say, 12 hours, sit still staring into a wall and then go riding for 12 hours. So you're just staring into a wall, letting your thoughts go where they go. Mm. It's an incredibly challenging, but incredibly powerful exercise in stillness. I haven't done it for 12 hours. I mean, I did spend 7 days in darkness, but I haven't done the staring. First time I did the staring into a wall exercise, I set a timer on my phone for 45 minutes, put my phone to the side, and I actually thought the timer on my phone is broken. I was like, is my phone battery died? Is the timer broken? Because this feels like it's really long. But let your thoughts go where they go, and I guarantee you some fascinating stuff will show up.
Right. And I think the problem in today's society is that if we're in a situation like that and we're not actively trying to let our thoughts go where they go, what we do instead is we pull out the phone.
Exactly.
We try to see what's going on Facebook, what's going on the news, things like that, to try to
be still.
Block that journey we're supposed to take, right?
Exactly. We're constantly running away from ourselves, and our environment makes it that much more conducive. And I'm not going to say I'm like perfect at like not doing that. It's especially now when I get busy with work, I'll be checking an email. Maybe I'm expecting an important email or something. And then every once in a while, I remind me like, whoa, like let's pause for a minute, you know? So I'm not saying I'm perfect at it in this. So the environment will cultivate that. So you have to be very conscious, and it's a relentless battle, man. Like, because it's in the sense I can go to a stimuli, like go into a darkness retreat where you have almost no choice. That's again, the beauty when you create restrictions, when you have constraints, like in the Marines, right? Again, there's constraints. You have to essentially go do it. So you do it, you know, in the Marines, if you're out in the field, you don't have your phone or whatever, right? They take it away. You're stuck. You don't have a choice. So you embrace that and you make the best out of it. But in this world, when you have that, you have to set your own restrictions and own rules and follow them to a T, man. Because otherwise, the environment is that much more conducive to distractions all the time. And so you really gotta fight hard to allow yourself. Like these days, sometimes when I drive, I'll listen to no music, no phone, and just ponder, let my thoughts go as I'm driving, as I'm thinking, you know? And even when I run, a lot of times now when I run, I don't listen to music or podcasts or anything and just let my thoughts go and see where they take me.
Yeah. I love running so much. But the problem, I have ulcerative colitis. And so a lot of times my runs get heavily interrupted. It sucks because it's such a great way of just emptying your mind.
Yeah.
Other activities that you've come across that could, you know, maybe substitute or have the same kind of effect, for those people out there who can't run.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I like endurance sports for those reasons, because there are these long extended moments. So, I mean, if, you know, we can substitute cycling, swimming or anything, but even if not that, like some form of exercise is one of the most valuable things you can do. And the beauty in it simplifies life. When you're in the exercise mode, like the only thing that matters is the thing in front of you. You know, if you're lifting a bar, for example, in the gym, your world is that bar, you know? And, so exercising in the gym, and like even just neurologically, one neuroscientist calls exercise miracle growth for the brain, what it does to your synaptic connections, your neuronal wiring. Another neuroscientist said that if you could put the effects of exercise into a pill, it would be the best-selling pill of all time. So exercise is just one of the best things you could do. It also, on a spiritual level, it trains you how to suffer. I mean, that's why in the Marines, we go through in boot camp and infantry school. Exercise teaches you how to suffer, and it teaches you how to suffer well, which is the most important skill to master. The ability to suffer well, as I like to say to suffer well, to smile in the face of suffering, is the most important skill to live a happier, more meaningful life. Because if you can suffer well, it won't matter whether life hits you in the face or whether you're seeking a meaningful challenge, like joining the Marines, running ultramarathons, building a business, anything worthwhile is hard to do. But if you can smile in the face of that suffering, you'll be able to enjoy the struggle, even when it sucks, which again, Marines can kind of relate to that. There is beauty even in the suck. Like we say, embrace the suck, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Nice, man. So where can people find you? Where can they find your digital products? And where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, the book itself is available on Amazon, Fearvana. It's in Kindle, paperback, Audible. You can find me at fearvana.com. That's Fearvana, fearvana.com. And I have digital products around mastery. I have also some digital products around how I got so much media exposure for my book. So if you're building a brand, I have a product that'll help you build and scale your brand and use publicity and the power of media to do that as well. So fearvana.com, you can find me, reach out to me, and here to help in any way I can.
Nice. Let's check that out, man. Awesome. Now, for everybody out there, I definitely recommend the book. I'm listening to it right now, getting a whole lot out of it. Big things I think we talked about today. Number one is understanding that, you know, in the suffering is where you're going to find that meaning and purpose you're looking for. Mm-hmm. If you're going out there and just kind of chasing meaning and purpose, you know, through, I think a lot of people set goals constantly trying to get to a point where they're happier and finding that purpose, meaning, yeah, and greater relevance that they want. But the problem is that if there is no meaning in the first place, the goal is not going to mean much. And that's why you see people constantly dropping goals every year, yeah, over and over and over, yeah, again. The other point here I think we came to is that, you know, this constant stimuli to our brain, you know, the idea that we constantly have to be doing something, that we, yeah, constantly have to be posting on social media or reading something or doing this or doing that. It's not the best way of getting to where you should be or where you want to go.
Yeah.
And you need moments of what Ashke called stillness. So that you're allowing your brain to really travel to where it should be. Right.
Absolutely, brother. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So, Ashke, number one, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Number two, I want to acknowledge you for the work you do. It's great to see a fellow Marine getting out there and making things happen and influencing so many people. And I wish you the best, man.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me on the show. A real pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. And thanks, to everybody, man, out there, get out there and live your best lives while you can. We'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. All right, there you have it, our interview with Mr. Akshay Nanavanti. And I hope you got a lot out of that interview. I hope you do check out that book, Fearvana. We are going to have the link for that up on the show notes, as we do with any author who comes on to this podcast. And again, I just want to thank you guys so much for coming on here and listening each week, for spreading the word about what we're doing here at Warrior Soul, and for empowering other veterans out there so that they can live their best lives and come back and take their rightful places as leaders in our society. That's what this movement is all about, and I couldn't do it without each and every one of you. So again, thank you so much. We'll be back at you later on this week with some more amazing content.